See, that was what you call a dropout, what would call a dropout today. Back in the 30s, the Depression years. No work or nothing.
Right.
So I volunteered then for the CCC camps. And I went out, worked in Pennsylvania, worked also for the Dutch Elm Division. And I went out west and spent a year and a half out there in Utah. Hopped the freights to California.
Really?
It was rough in those days. I mean,
go on, you really did that?
You know, talk about these kids today, that's what they should do with them. Went to California, hopping freights with $1.20 a bag of peanut with peanut butter and a loaf of bread. That's how we lived on, two of us. Fighting with hobos to try to take our shoes. Oh, in those days, they'd kill you for a dollar. Because the railroads were full of hobos.
Uh-huh.
But we were CC camps, you know, we had leave, so we traveled, we had our uniform. So then, after that, when war broke out, I was inducted. I went down to Fort McClellan, Alabama. Got my basic training.
Okay, now wait one second. I don't mean to back up.
Yeah.
But what about your family? Did you have brothers or sisters?
Oh, yeah, sure. We lived in Passaic. I had a brother and two sisters. In fact, when I left, I never forgot, I got called down at the draft board in Passaic, and I'd had an appendix operation. I went to the hospital, and they called up my sister to say, you're supposed to be report today. She said, well, he can't report. So what do you mean he can't report? So he's in the hospital. Well, have him report Monday. Yeah, I got an operation. So anyway, I got a deferment for, I think it was 3 weeks. I came out and everything healed up good. Then I went down to Fort Dix, from Fort Dix to Fort McClellan, uh-huh. Alabama. Trained there, and then I was assigned, most of them were shipped to the Pacific. And there were about a dozen of us picked out, and we were sent to New Orleans, to Chalmette Slip, as military police. And from there we were stationed out at under the Huey Long Bridge, called Camp Harahan, which was the big port of embarkation.
Right.
All the troops were coming there, being trucked over to the port, put on boats for the Pacific. Also, we had a lot of elements there of rapists and murderers and
really?
Whatnot. You know, the army was big in those days. Had every kind of. And we had the compound with a lot of men there. There must have been about, at least at any one time, I'd say 300, 400. And most of them were being processed for shipment to Leavenworth.
Really?
Some of them were bad characters.
Bad apples.
Sent from Panama, murderers, rapists, who the hell knows what, you know. Real bad characters. And we'd go into the mess hall. We'd have to leave our sidearms out. These were all kind of elements, you know, guys getting a brawl in a city there and end up killing somebody or stabbing somebody, and naturally they were military personnel. Into the guardhouse and from there to Leavenworth. So, the one day I volunteered for paratroops. I didn't like it down there because first, it was too GI, if you understand what I mean. I had a mate, I could stay there the whole war, lived high on the hog. I had a Jeep, go patrolling at night, 11 o'clock at night, pick up the drunks, bring them back. Then I'd be on the gate many times. And what did really discourage me about the military at that point, or that branch of the military, is that people would be coming back from leave. Only, I think they allowed 5% on leave because they were all detained inside the camp. They were afraid someone would split. And naturally, they'd come back, they'd be bringing liquor for the guys inside. They'd say, hey, Joe, bring me back a pint of this or that. So as they come in, the guys would have bomb, they got a pint sticking out of them, one pint sticking, and you had to confiscate it. Give them a slip, put it in a box. And then some of them, they'd be hidden pretty well, you know, so you made a point not to notice it. But the reason for that was, after each shift, they had to take the box and bring it over to the officers' quarters. So the officers were living high on the hog on this liquor. The poor bastards that were going to go over and die. I said, well, I didn't like that. I didn't take too good to that.
Sure.
If it was destroyed, it was one thing. But they went over to the officers' club, and they went on the bar, and they poured out, you know, scotch and gins and whatnot. And then another thing, there was a lot of muggings down there, what we call muggings today.
Okay.
It was mostly the taxi guys. See, Camp Harahan, I'd say, was about 12 miles out of New Orleans, right underneath the Huey Long Bridge. What was happening, the guys would go to town. Those had money. It came from wealthy families, had plenty of money. They'd go out and have a good time, woman, whatever. Then they'd get a taxi to come back. They wouldn't come back with the regular trucks. You know, the fellas had to meet at a place where the trucks would be there, and they'd all get in and come back to camp. But the fellas with money, they'd hire a cab, be bombed out, and on the way back, they'd pass out, and they'd be rolled. The cab would pull over, go through their pockets, dump them in the ditch, and go back. So what we'd do, my partner and I, we'd lay on the side of the road, and we'd wait. You could see down in the bayous, it's thick cypress trees. And there's just a channel where the light comes through because of the road. And as dark as it was, you could always figure where the road was. So we'd lay on the side, and we'd wait. We'd see a taxi coming, you know, coming from a long distance. Go by, okay, didn't bother. Then another one comes. All of a sudden, the lights would go out. Oh, man, turn on the ignition, and we'd take off. No lights, you know, take off, follow the road. You just about could make out the road in that dark bike.
Uh-huh.
We go 60 miles an hour. When we got about there, we put the lights on, we catch the guy rolling the guy in the ditch. The club busted all the windows in the taxi cab, beat the hell out of the guy, took the drunk, put him in our Jeep, and took him back to camp. Nothing was ever said. Because they knew damn well, they complained, they were in trouble. We did that twice, and then it stopped. But then I became disillusioned, you know, because the fellows there were a different breed. I know it is. They turn you in, they turn on you. Everybody was vying for the next position. So I put in for the paratroops. I waited. 3 weeks went by, and I knew they needed recruits. I went in. I never figured the man's name was Sergeant Flood. I went in, I says, nothing come through, my transfer? No, not yet. He said, I make out the papers again with the clerk there. He said, maybe they went astray. So I go over there and made them out. Waited another week. In the meantime, I'm nervous. A couple of the guys needled me. I wanted to get out. Well, you don't like this place? You know, giving me a needle. One big fella in the mess hall. See, in the mess hall, we had to go in the compound. The prisoners ate. Then we had to leave our guns in, except for the guards on the outside. Mm-hmm. And we went in, we ate, and then we'd come out. And the one fella, big Polish fella, he kept needling me. When are you getting out? When are you getting out? So that day I went back in, the third time. I says, well, I don't know. I says, well, look, I've been waiting now. What is it, 3, 4 weeks, 5 weeks? He says, well, make out the papers again. He pulls the drawer out of the clerk. Now you know your own signature, you can pick it out 10 feet away. And if all the papers in there, I seen one paper I could make out my signature. I reached right down the drawer and I pulled it out, they never processed it. Man, I was like a wild man. I went out there, stormed out, it was just lunchtime. Checked in my weapon, went inside the mess hall, and a guy gave me the needle. And the worst time he could have done it, I would whack him right in the mess hall. Big tubs of potatoes, and they had potatoes, cabbage, and whatever, all over the floor. And we were wrestling there for 15 minutes. It was a mess. They took me into the provost marshal.
Do you mind my laughing at that?
No, I mean, it's funny. You know, I look back now, you know, I was wild. I was a tough son of a gun in those days. Not like I'm a pussycat now. So, next thing I know, he grabbed me to bring me into the provost marshal, colonel. He says, what's your problem, son? Sir, I says, if I don't get out of here within the next week, I says, I'm going to be behind that compound. Well, I explained what happened to him. I put in for my application, found out they'd given me the jerking around and they had never sent it. Is that true? Sergeant Flood, come in here. Sergeant Flood told him, he says, well, we probably gave him some excuse. He says, I want those papers processed immediately. And never forget it. He says, why do you want to get out of here? I said, well, it's a nice place here, but I just can't get along with most of these fellas. I said, I'd rather be in a unit. If I'm going to be in a war, let's get over there and get it over with. So I never forget, he says, I commend you. Papers come in, boom, boom, boom. 2 days later, three of the guys that were giving me problems, there were no place in sight, because I was going to bomb each one of them. You know, I was really hot. In fact, I had one fight in the barracks, right through the window, knocked the guy. We had the double bunks, and even then I was brought in there. But then all that was off the record, you know, more or less. So next thing I know, I get my transfer. I get up to Fort Benning. Next thing I know, the next day I'm doing push-up, 50 push-ups. What the hell am I doing here? I must be nuts. Running, everything running. Never could stop. You couldn't even stop to take a leak. You had to take a leak running. We had a double time wherever you were. You couldn't get caught walking. You went to the latrine, you had a double time, even if you were ready to let it loose. It was rough, I'll tell you. The training was unbelievable. I passed out twice during training. A lot of guys do it and pass out, you see. They get you at the Indian War Clubs in front of the big hangars, right? This was like in July. Hot as anything down in Georgia. You know what Georgia's like. Uh-huh. You got the war clubs and you're doing a circle. And then you're going deep knee bends at the same time. Then you're coming up. And then in the front. And then overhead. You got these, you know, like bowling pins. Man, your arms are, oh, the pain is unbelievable. Next thing you know, from the heat, you know, and everything. Next thing I know, I'm on the ground. They're slapping. That's all right. You're okay. Pulled me on the side. Gave me a glass of water with some salt in it. Another guy pass out. They go over there. What they do is give you a kick in the rump. They see your eyes blink. They grab you and pull you on the side. What's your name? Report to the officer. Pull them out. They don't want anybody that's faking. If you passed out, that means you want your limit. You know, the heat, the exhaustion, or whatever it was. But if you faked it, they don't want you there. Because tomorrow you're going to fake while the guy needs. And we had some fakers. I had one guy that I sent him back with seven prisoners. No seven prisoners would have been dead except that I sent him back. Because he had tried to goof out on me during the bulge. Monahan is that guy's name was. And I had it chased all the way back to a regimental aid station. There was nothing wrong with him. He was looking to get evacuated. Beat the hell out of me and Hoffman. I hit him on the 50 times on the head, knocked his helmet loose, got him up to the front line, went into the attack. We lost quite a few men, took seven prisoners, and I had one guy, I think his name was Wood. He had just one of the sergeants, Sergeant Savage. Shrapnel took his head right off. Mm. He's laying there with brains all over. Wood come over, he wanted to take the prisoners back. And he's shaking like, you know, he's got a Thompson. He's shaking like a leaf. So I wrote a story for a book, but they didn't put it in because it's showing that the American, too, is a killer. You know, not only the Germans. The Americans, you got some of them are vicious. Not for, in his case, it was a matter he lost his brothers. Equipment. Sure. So I grabbed Monahan because I didn't want him in there. And I said, Monahan, take these prisoners back. In the meantime, the Germans are over there, they're shaking like a leaf because they could understand English. They could understand what it was all about.
Sure.
Go back 200 yards, it would have killed every one of them. So there's seven Germans that are still living. They owe me their life.